Hi there, welcome to another podcast from Andy Poulton, your Chief SEO Officer. Have a listen, I hope you find it useful. Hiya, Andy Poulton here, your Chief SEO Officer. How are you doing? Last time out, I talked about some of the cybersecurity threats, the main cybersecurity threats that your business could face. This time round, I'm going to look at some of the things that you can do to improve your cybersecurity, both personal and business. The measures that you can take here will make your business harder to defraud, harder to hack, and make you and your business less likely to fall victim to cybercrime. Now let's start with your website. Hackers around the world are queuing up to take over your website or simply to bring it to its knees in order to stop it working. This is so they can demand money to restore it to good working order. This latter approach, i.e. bringing your website to its knees, is called a distributed denial of service attack. Go back to my last pod and that'll explain what a DDoS is. But how can you stop a DDoS attack from bringing your website down? I mean, they're happening all around the world. It doesn't matter the size of your business because the cyber criminals don't care. They don't even really know. They just know there's a website out there and they're going to attack it. And there are two approaches. The first approach is you can choose a web host that has the necessary provisions in place to ensure that they have the connectivity and technology to make sure that a DDoS attack can't prevent their web servers from running. They will use a variety of technology, including sophisticated firewalls, traffic filtering, DDoS defense systems. But not all web hosts offer this level of security, so you have to ask the question and you have to shop around. A better option, in my opinion, is to use a content delivery network, a CDN. A CDN uses many servers located around the globe. This means that if a single server location is targeted, regular visitors are simply directed to the next nearest server, totally mitigating the threat from a DDoS service. But there's another big advantage to a CDN. This puts your website much, much closer to your visitors. So let's say you are targeting the USA. If you use a content delivery network, there will be a server in the USA. So the visitors to your website will get content delivered to them locally, which helps your website perform faster. Because as I've said many, many times before, nobody likes a slow website. And Google certainly doesn't like a slow website, and slow websites don't perform very well in the search results. Using a CDN gives you a double whammy. It gives you security and it gives you speed. And the top content delivery networks are Cloudflare, Amazon CloudFront, and Microsoft Azure. So what else can you do to protect yourself? Well, there's passwords. I know. I'm always banging on about passwords, but they are gateways into your PCs, your phones, your networks, your web host, your website, and so much more. So your gateway passwords need to be really secure if you're going to keep the hackers out, and you really do want to keep them out. You might think that there'd be no interest in your website, but hackers are targeting websites, and they're targeting every single one they can find, because
There's gold in them hills.
The UK's National Cybersecurity Centre, based out of GCHQ in Cheltenham, the country's hackers, if you like, recommend using a password comprising of three random words. Tablet, sugar snaps, candle. Those are three things that I can see around my desk. And using a unique password for every site you access. Now, I recently made a short video about this, so you can find it on YouTube. But why three random words? Because they're easier to type than a 16 character combination of upper and lowercase numbers and symbols. That's all. There's no mystery behind it. It just makes it easier to remember and easier to type. Next up are firewalls. A firewall provides an impenetrable, unhackable barrier, provided it's properly configured, between the internet and your computer or your computer network. Yes, Windows has a firewall. And it's certainly better than having no firewall at all, but in reality, it's about as much use as a chocolate fire guard. It's just too easy to misconfigure, especially if you're not sure what you're doing and you're looking at sharing files between computers or have a small network and you fiddled with the settings to make it easier to move files from one computer to another. It might deter the casual hacker, but it certainly won't stop a determined one. Next up are software firewalls that are provided by the same companies that sell antivirus software. These are better than the Windows firewall, but similar issues remain. and each device on your network has to have one installed and kept up to date, so there's an added cost. A far better solution is to use a firewall appliance, a little box of technology that goes between you, your internet router, and the internet. And talking about your router, i.e. the device that was supplied to you by your broadband provider, the router does have a firewall, but it's a tad rudimentary. And if you haven't set a secure password, it'll still be using the default password it came with. And if you Google the brand and model of your router, you will find online the default username and password in online versions of the help guides. Not very secure. And if that's what you're relying on to keep the bad guys out of your office network, you're not doing a very good job. The most popular firewall appliances are provided by WatchGuard, SonicWall, and Cisco, but there are hundreds of others. And as I said, these act as a barrier, a wall between your network or your computer and the internet, and they help defend you from a range of cyber attacks. I might be a little paranoid, but my office setup looks a bit like this. I'm in a serviced office. My serviced office provider has a WatchGuard firewall in their comms room, which is brilliant. But I also have a D-Link firewall in my office, and I use the Windows firewall on my computers. Why do I have a D-Link firewall in my office? Quite simple. My office service provider provides a Wi-Fi network to guests. Yes, it's secure, but I don't know how secure. I take it on trust. So I don't take it on trust. I actually put my own security in place. The next thing you can do to make extra security provisions is get yourself a VPN, a virtual private network. You sometimes hear these advertised on the radio and on TV as being a solution to security. They're not a solution, they are part of the solution. Imagine the scenario. You pop into your favourite coffee shop and need to jump on their free Wi-Fi because, I don't know, you need to do some banking or you need to get your emails. You spot the password on a tent card on your table, fire up your laptop, Chromebook, tablet, phone, whatever, and search for the Wi-Fi. There it is, right at the top of the list, free coffee shop Wi-Fi. You click, you enter the password from the tent card, and you're away. You log into your office email account, and then you might check your private email. Then you check your bank, and that confirms that you've enough to buy that latest thing that you've been hankering after. Later that day, you check your emails again. There's an unexpected one from your favourite shopping site confirming a change of password. Not something you remember doing. So you check your bank account. It's empty, drained of everything. And that happened while you were finishing your coffee. So what happened? Well, when you logged in to the coffee shop Wi-Fi, you weren't logging into the legitimate account. Somebody had set up a clone inside the coffee shop, which you found and logged into. The details on the tent card, remember? The person that was running the clone was sniffing all of the traffic going through the Wi-Fi hotspot they'd set up. When I say sniffing, that means monitoring. And they were merrily pulling off websites, usernames and passwords, and happily started to spend other people's money, including yours, to buy their most wanted things. This is known as a man-in-the-middle attack. And could you have prevented it? Yes, you could, very, very easily. Just get yourself a VPN. They're inexpensive, but provide a very secure way to access the internet. Simply put, a VPN creates a secure, encrypted, private tunnel between your device, whatever it is, laptop, phone, tablet, desktop, and the destination website, whatever that might be, bank, email account, online shopping site, etc. It doesn't matter whether you are on a genuine Wi-Fi or a cloned Wi-Fi service, your tunnel can't be broken into. It drives its way straight through that hotspot, ending up securely at the endpoint. Another use of VPNs is when you work remotely and you need to access office emails securely. A VPN will again secure the data that moves between you and the office server. You might use a VPN at home, just in case your neighbour is on your Wi-Fi and is sniffing your data. And finally, if you want to appear to be in a different country, let's say you're on holiday abroad and want to watch the BBC iPlayer content that's only available in the UK, fire up your VPN, select a point of presence in the UK, and bingo, your VPN makes it look as though you're in the UK. And it works for other broadcast providers too, but not all of them, because some of them are VPN savvy. If you subscribe to a Google Business Service, then you have access to a free Google VPN for your phones and tablets. If you don't trust Google or don't want to use Google, then here's a couple of the best. They're provided by ExpressVPN, TunnelBear, and StrongVPN. I use TunnelBear personally. I'm not an affiliate, so if you sign up, there's no benefit to me. just added security to you. So what else can you do to protect your security? Don't click. Phishing, SMS smishing, and spear phishing emails are mainly designed to make you click on a link to visit a genuine looking but fake website where your login information can be harvested. I'm going to be blunt. Don't click. If you think the email may be genuine, you can either contact the sender by phone or with a fresh email. Don't hit reply, but with a fresh email and ask them for clarification. If it's a link to a website, then enter the domain name yourself in your web browser. Don't click the link, enter the domain name you think it should be. And don't copy the link either. But you can hover your cursor over the link and somewhere in your email program, in Outlook for example, it's in the bottom left of the email, you will see the whole URL expanded into all its glory. So it might look like a proper website, but it probably won't link to a proper website because that's easy to fake. And even if you believe the link to be valid, don't click on it, but manually again enter the URL or do a search for the company and go to the company's website from there and perhaps ask the company the question. In my previous pod, I also talked about fake news and fake reviews. What can you do about competitors who post fake stories about your business? Well, you can't stop them posting the fake stories, whether it's fake news or fake reviews. But you can be on the lookout so that you can take remedial action. Use tools such as Google Alerts, which is free. You set up the Google Alerts, you give it some keywords, which could perhaps be your business name or some branded product that you sell. And every time that Google comes across a reference to these on the internet, it will send you an email. There's a similar product called drumup.io, which can also do a similar thing, but across publications, internet publications, obviously. And when something turns up that uses your brand or company name, again, you can get a notification. You'll see where the article's been posted and you can review what's been posted. If it's obviously fake news, you should post a reply to the article and contact the host of the review platform and ask them to take it down. But when you post a reply, don't get shirty. Answer with the facts. Keep it calm. Keep it clear and keep it concise. What can you do about hacking if you do get hacked? What can you do to prevent your devices and networks from being hacked? Well, you can use a firewall to provide a secure wall between your network and the outside world. You can make sure that you've changed the default usernames and passwords on your routers and other devices. And don't forget, using a hard-to-crack password, those three random words from the National Cybersecurity Center. You could use biometric access controls, fingerprint or facial recognition on phones, tablets, and computing devices. You should remain wary of emails and attachments. Keep your antivirus programs up to date. Keep Windows up to date if you use Windows. Consider encrypting your data so if it's stolen, then it won't be of any value. And ensure that you are regularly backing up your files. And as well as regularly backing up your files, you need to periodically check that you are 1. Backing up the files you think you're backing up. 2. Backing up the files that you need to back up, and 3, that you're able to recover the backed up files. Because there's nothing like finding that your backups are corrupt or wrong when you've lost the data. It's way too late then. And finally, train your staff and keep their training up to date so they know how to identify potential threats and to whom they should share their concerns with. And while we're on the subject of staff, let's look at insider threats. They're the most insidious. These are the people who you trust, the people within your organization. So what can you do? Well, you should control what they have access to. Nobody outside the accounts department, with the exception of perhaps some board members, needs to have access to financial systems and files. I remember working for an employer where I could see everything. And I told the employer that I didn't think it was wise that I could access the accounts. And they locked everybody apart from the accounts department out of the accounts. Nobody outside of sales needs to have access to all clients at all stages in the sales process. Somebody could walk away from your business and take your client data with them. Work hard to know your staff. Talk to them. Understand what makes them tick, their personal situation, without being creepily intrusive. Join conversations around the water cooler. Have an open door policy so that your people know they can bring their concerns to you. You should also have a very clear policy on BYOD. Bring your own device, where people are permitted to use their personal phones, tablets and laptops and connect them to the company networks and Wi-Fi. Yes, it's a great way to save money by allowing people to use their own equipment, but it opens up a whole host of risks. What are they taking home with them to work on? What websites are they visiting during work time whilst connecting to the company network? What social media platforms are they on whilst in company time and on the company network? What security protection are they using on their private devices? What policies are in place to manage their use of external memory devices such as USB sticks and external hard drives? And what files and folders can they access from their personal devices? Ultimately, you might decide that the risk outweighs the benefit and simply provide all of the equipment and tools that your people need to be able to do their job and ban personal devices from connecting to computer networks. And I talked about USB memory sticks, and they can be a threat, and they can be an absolute nightmare. I've got a USB memory stick, I plug it into my home computer, I do some work, I save on it, I plug it into my office computer, and the virus that I had on my home computer is inside the company. You must have a policy in place that covers how they are used, how and whether your employees can use their own, what the policy is in relation to found devices, how you will manage lost devices that might have company information on them, and an overall policy with regards to USB ports. I know of many companies that have simply banned the use of unauthorized USB devices. And remember, connecting a phone or tablet to charge it means that the device can also be used as a USB storage device to take data, borrow data, steal data, or introduce a virus. I know of one business advisor who used superglue in the USB ports to ensure that absolutely nothing could be plugged into the majority of computers and servers in his business. Note the majority. Even I agree that this was an extreme solution, but I get his point. Ransomware, another email threat, normally arrives as an attachment or on an email or as a link contained in an email. Your good email security and data hygiene will minimize the risk from this threat. Viruses, Trojans, and other malware. Most viruses and Trojans infiltrate a business via attachments on emails and links in emails. The attachments might look like PDFs, Word or Excel documents or pictures, but they won't be. They will either have embedded macros, so a macro is a dedicated programming language, macros in Word and Excel, for example, or they might mask their true type. Something that looks like picture.jpg might actually be picture.jpg.exe, a file that will run when clicked rather than a nice picture that will open when clicked. And those rogue USB devices remain an ever-present threat. Avoiding these threats comes down again to good email security and data hygiene, although this is obviously reliant on good training, regular updates, and reminders. You must have a decent antivirus application running on all devices. That's phones and tablets too. It's got to be kept up to date, but it's a constant war because the cyber criminals are always on the lookout for ways to circumvent security software, so you still need to be alert. And finally, ditch Windows. I know it sounds like heresy, but Microsoft does have a bit of a reputation for insecurity. Yes, it's better than it was, but as the most popular operating system, it's also the most popular target for hackers. It even has its own day of the week, Patch Tuesday, when all manner of updates are released, including security fixes. Yes, Apple Macs are better, but they're not invulnerable. Because their popularity is increasing, they become a more attractive target for the hackers. So it's not as secure as you'd like to think. So is there a solution? And there is. It's called Linux. Linux has been around for more than 30 years, is properly free and very secure. Now you might have heard that you need to be a bit of a geek to install Linux and use it. Is that true? Well, no, it's not these days. For most, it's as easy as installing Windows. And in fact, it even looks and works a lot like Windows because that's what we're all used to. I run a Linux machine in the office and it uses Linux Mint, which is probably one of the easiest to download, install and come to terms with. Just search for Linux Mint on the internet, you'll find it. And there's loads of instructions on how to install it and use it. Another popular Linux distribution is Ubuntu. And one of the things you can do with Ubuntu is run it from a USB stick. This means you can give it a try without actually installing it on your devices. And when you install Linux, if you do a bit of research, you will also learn how to install it into a dual boot scenario. And this means you can keep Windows and you can run Linux side by side on the same computer and simply choose which ones you want to run when you boot your PC. I'm not a cybersecurity expert, although I've done my fair bit and I've got a fair understanding. And I do my best to stay up to date, so do feel free to send any questions that you might have. My contact details are coming up after this, but if you search for Andy Poulton, Chief SEO Officer, you'll find me. Hunt me down on social medias. I'm on LinkedIn and Twitter, and ask me questions. And if I can't answer your questions, I know some mighty fine real cybersecurity experts that I can put you in touch with. Thanks for listening. Don't forget, if you need help with your cybersecurity, your SEO, or any other element of your digital marketing, please don't hesitate to get in touch. And now my contact details are coming up. Thanks again for listening. Looking forward to talking to you next time. You've just been listening to a podcast by Andy Poulton, your Chief SEO Officer. You can reach me on 01793 23 80 20 or hunt me down on social media, Twitter and LinkedIn. Just search Andy Poulton. Thanks for listening.